Welcome in, Hokies fans, to this edition of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We record on Monday, November 8th, and this starts crossover season for us here on the Tech Sideline Podcast as episode 206. We'll start with Virginia Tech football struggles in Boston College this weekend, a 17-3 loss on Friday night, and then in the second half, we will transition to Hokies hoops as they begin their season tomorrow night against Maine in Castle Coliseum. All of that and much more on episode 206 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, which starts right now. We welcome you in, however you are taking in this episode of the Tech Sideline Podcast, whether that's archived on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts, or if you are watching on YouTube Archive, be sure to give us a like, comment, and subscribe to the Tech Sideline YouTube channel. If you are in the live YouTube stream, be sure to drop a question or comment in the chat for Will and Chris, and we will get to those with Nick at the end of the show. As always, the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. You can help bring Olympic hopeful athletes to one of the best and fastest growing wrestling programs in the entire country. Visit southeastrtc.com to learn more and donate today. We are finally back in the morning on Monday for the first time in what feels like almost a month. We got the usual crew on set. Will Stewart across the way, founder and general manager of TechSideline.com, lead analyst and columnist Chris Coleman to my left. In the fourth chair today, it is Nick Brown. He will have his segment in the middle of the show. Going to talk football and men's basketball as we, again, enter crossover season here. Behind the scenes, Malcolm Stewart, the best podcast producer in the land, and I'm your host, Jake Lyman. We have to start with the tough stuff, football, on Friday night. Traveled up to Chestnut Hill and lost 17-3. And I wanted to start with, you all picked Virginia Tech in this game and felt pretty confident about it, that it was a good matchup for the Hokies. How far into warm-ups when you saw Phil Dracovich warming up and Trey Turner not warming up did you want to change your pick?
You know, the thing about Dracovich, like, I knew he would present a greater challenge, but at the same time, he hadn't played since early September.
So he really didn't play.
They didn't let him throw it all that much, which is odd for Haefeli, because all he does is throw the ball around the park.
Until he gets to Virginia Tech
and actually comes up with the right game plan. But I think some of that was due to the rust of Dracovich. So, I wanted to change my pick, but I didn't like completely want to change my pick until Burmeister got hurt.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I thought even with Dracovich in, the Tech still had a good chance at winning.
Well, the Hokies started off playing well against Dracovich. Dorian Strong gets an interception. Didn't last very long. Ended up being a 22-yard gain for Boston College in the net after he fumbled it. It's a big play for Dorian Strong. He read it perfectly, but maybe just a little bit of his youth showing that he couldn't get down and take care of the football.
Yeah, and maybe a little bit of that is you don't have confidence in your own offense, so you're trying to get as big a return as possible. I don't know. You'd have to ask Dorian Strong that
question. Did you see Chamari run over to him right after the fumble and point at the sideline? Like, run over to the sideline. Get out of bounds with the next one.
Yeah.
Well, it was a big play, and then Boston College proceeded to score. They went up 7-0. And then, like you mentioned, that's when disaster kind of struck for Virginia Tech as Braxton Burmeister went down. He only threw one pass in the entire game.
Played
before
nine
he got
snaps.
Hurt.
Looked it up.
It's tough for the Hokies to do much when Braxton Burmeister goes down. Just not a ton of, you know, elite arm talent behind him.
No, and I mean, I said on last Wednesday's podcast, I don't know how Virginia Tech can win a football game without Braxton Burmeister because I don't think they have the quarterback talent behind them, and I've been saying that all year. And I texted you and David during the game as soon as he got hurt and said the scoring streak is about to end tonight. I was wrong, but barely.
It took a 47-yard field goal from John Parker Romo.
So you were in champs when JPR kicked that field goal and you said champs erupted.
Yeah, it did.
It continues for at least one more game.
So, I always play this game and I think it annoys people. If you look at the game, Dorian Strong intercepts the ball and then fumbles it back and BC scores a touchdown. I think it was BC's next possession where they had a 3rd and 11 and Dracovich threw a duck. And I think it was Tay Daly comes in and smacks it down. and they catch it for a 10-yard gain.
Yeah, but just bounced up in the air.
Yeah, and then they pick up the first down and they kick a field goal. That's 10 points that you can argue they shouldn't have gotten.
It sort of reminded me of, like, all right, so you remember the 2008 Miami game when they fumbled like three times and the ball kept bouncing 10 yards forward and they would recover.
I know.
And the same thing happened in the Michigan game.
And Virginia Tech wound up winning that game against Miami anyway, right?
No, not in 2008.
That was the one they lost 16-10, I think.
Maybe.
And then it was the 2006 game I'm thinking of.
It was 17-10. We had a late touchdown, yeah. Tech won that game with about 190 yards of total offense.
Yeah, I looked this stuff up as Tech was flailing away offensively. There's this little-known football stats database that you can search on Hokie Sports. It's not the regular Hokie Sports. It's over on, I think, stats.hokiesports.com. You can drill down and find a football database that you can search. So I was searching on fewest yards per game, you know, for Virginia Tech. And that Miami game showed up. And it was, I searched a lot of stats, so they're all kind of muddled up in my mind. But I got a big, long list of games. And I think that's the only one Tech won was that game against Miami.
Yeah, like, what was the lowest? Like, the lowest one I remember off the top of my head was Pitt in 2015 with exactly 100 yards.
So which, I will do that research while
we're
talking.
Which makes me wonder, how in the world did Tech score in that game when they only had 100 yards of offense? And I don't remember the score of the game, but I do remember that they scored.
Well, Will talks – he makes a good point that some bad luck went the Hokies' defense's way, a fumble on an interception, and then a tip ends up being a 10-yard gain. Burmeister goes down. This is a game the Hokies easily could have been in if it didn't seem like the first quarter of the game, pretty much everything went wrong.
Yeah, everything did go wrong for that first quarter as far as those two plays and then the Burmeister injury. Tech was running the ball well early in the game. They actually ran the ball well the entire game, especially when you consider that after Burmeister went down, I mean, BC knew Tech had no hope of completing passes down the field for big gains, so you could just sell out against the run, and Tech was still able to run the ball. So that's a credit to how the running game is developed and everything, but there's just not a great chance of a competent passing game without Burmeister in there. And I'm not saying he's an elite passer. I'm just saying it's like
he's a competent passer.
Yeah, right. When I watch those two open practices at the beginning of the spring, I thought there was a significant downgrade after Burmeister. I'm hopeful, or at least from Burmeister to Kadem. As far as Blumrick goes, Justin Fuente said after the Notre Dame game that, you know, he would be out about a month. And we're coming up on about a month. And yes, this is falling off the table next to your wonderful engineering.
Oh, no, that's Malcolm.
No, it's Malcolm? Okay.
Yeah. So Chris is sitting with his mic in his lap.
Yes. And
anyway, sorry.
Second time that's happened to me. where was I?
These ones are at least a little less heavy than the old ones.
That's true.
That settles it, dude. I'm drilling a hole in the table. We're mounting that thing in the table.
Absolutely. I forgot what I was talking
about. Well, talking about the quarterback, just not much behind Burmeister.
Yeah, Blumrick, you know, didn't come in with the knowledge of the system because he hadn't been here. But at this point, if he can come back and Burmeister can't play, then Blumrick's the best option because – he has more arm talent than Kadem, and he can run. Like, Kadem knows the system better, but, like, I think he's got an FCS-level arm. And Virginia Tech, he was committed to JMU before decommitting and signing with the Hokies. So, like, your knowledge of the system only matters so much if you can't physically execute the majority of the offense. And that's why I think at this point, if Burmeister can't come back and Blumrick is ready, then Blumrick would be the better option.
Well, the Hokies didn't complete a pass until the final 2 minutes of the first half, 3 passing yards in the first half, total of just 73 in the game, and 50 of those came in the fourth quarter when the Hokies pretty much had to throw it. Will's got something over there?
All right, so let's have a little fun here. These records go back to 1987, so basically the beginning of the Beamer coaching era. So that 2015 game you mentioned against Pitt was 100 yards, and that's the second worst
since
1987.
Only 9 yards rushing in that game.
Yeah.
The worst was 60 yards against Clemson in September 12, 1987.
Beamer's first year.
September 12th, probably his second
probably
game.
Second,
yeah. I think they played either Navy or JMU in the first game. I don't really recall. So the first two were both losses, of course. The third game, 139 yards in 2006 at Miami, and the Hokies won 17-10.
And I remember Tech won that game on a late run by Brandon Orr. It was like perfectly blocked. Like it was a play you could draw up and say, "Wow, everything about that play was perfect."
So back to your point, back before YouTube, back before any sort of play diagramming existed. I mean, that was 2006. I remember writing an article and drawing this diagram with all the little players as circles and all these arrows showing how all the Tech blockers sealed everybody off. A couple of Miami guys went in the wrong direction, and the C's parted, and Brandon Orr scored the game winning touchdown.
It was like 1/7 of Virginia Tech's total offensive output that night.
Yeah,
and so it was one of those things. Like, look, see what you're capable of, but like you don't do it any other time. But Tech was still able to win that one. But I don't know. You can't win when you only score 3 points. Obviously.
So I've got, like I said, loss, win. And remember, these are worst total yardage performances by Virginia Tech. And then it's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 losses after that. Mm-hmm. So of the 21 worst total offensive performances, Tech actually won one of them.
And it was the third worst.
Yes. And and so this, it's 235 yards. It's pretty far down the list. It looks like it's about 40th or so. I'm just sitting here scrolling.
Yeah,
Tech did.
I mean, they ran the ball for 170-some yards. So you know, the running game was very capable. It was good enough to win that game if the passing game had been halfway decent.
And it made it clear that Malachi Thomas and Blackshear, they are that the duo in the backfield. Yeah. The Hokies have needed 137 yards on just 25 carries, so averaging well over 5 yards a carry.
Yeah, that's
another
five
good
and a
game.
Half,
and it was consistent for both of them. I think one was 5.6, the other was 5.4. Yeah, you know, they're clearly Tech's best two options there. The offensive line is playing better. Gallo had a good game at tight end, I think. And I'm just really impressed with the body lean of Malachi Thomas. He's just a natural runner. You always see he's got that forward lean that you look for in running backs. And I think once he gets some time in the weight room, he's got a chance to be he's a good player now, but he's got a chance to be a really good player.
Yeah. He's up to something like before the game, it was 305 yards gained and 3 yards lost. It's now 375 yards gained and 3 yards lost. That's a tremendous ratio.
He's still not going backwards.
He's got good vision. And, you know, if you do it once, you know, maybe it's a fluke. You do it twice, and you're like, oh, okay, your ears perked up. But now that's 3 good games in a row for him.
Yeah.
Wasn't 100 yards this time, but honestly, Tech didn't have the ball enough to have a get-around back over 100 yards.
Well, Tech ran 51 plays.
Right.
Their next lowest total is 60. I don't remember against Pitt. And you remember how flaccid that outing against Pitt was. Well, this was 9 plays worse. They only ran 51 plays. And part of that was, you know, this game moved very quickly because both teams were running at first. You know, Jason Benetti said on the broadcast, he said, it's a really fast-moving first quarter. You know, Virginia Tech had one possession in the first quarter and then one that started late in the first quarter. And only like 3 or 4 possessions in the entire first half.
I know like 3 of Tech's first 14 plays were running plays, and I should stop keeping up at that point.
Passing plays, you mean? I think you said 3 of the first 14.
Were running plays.
They didn't throw the ball.
13 of the first 14.
13.
Why did I say 3? Anyway. We expected a run-heavy attack.
Yeah.
Because BC has been bad against the run this year, but they have the number 10 pass defense in the country. So we knew coming in, like, without Trey Turner, who we pretty much knew wasn't going to play before the game, we knew that without Trey Turner, the passing game was going to be limited to a certain extent, no matter who was quarterback. I knew going in, like, this is going to be run by Virginia Tech. And then BC matched them by running all over the place. So, yeah, that was a quick game. I mean, I remember turning around. I was watching the game with Raleigh Hokie. And it just seemed like within an hour of kickoff, the game was almost halftime, because that's all it was just runs.
Well, we talked about on Wednesday's podcast, maybe Jeff Hafley is watching this podcast, because you said that if Boston College wants to win, they have to run the ball. And it seemed, I want to say, Garwo got close to 30 carries.
Yeah, it was the absolute right strategy for Boston College, particularly when they got the lead like that, 10-0, and Virginia Tech's backup quarterback is in the game, and there's no Trey Turner. So you're just sitting there thinking, look, there's just not much of a chance Virginia Tech's going to be able to win this game unless we screw it up. That should have been that's probably what was going through Hafley's mind at that point. So, that was the right strategy for him. It made for a boring football game, but that's what they needed to do to win.
Well, we're going to get an update on Braxton Burmeister, we assume, when Justin Fuente takes the podium in a little under an hour. But if Braxton Burmeister is unable to go, you've got three regular season games left. Could there be a potential to see Taj Bullock take the reins when you're not going to burn his red shirt at this point? And if the Hokies kind of see no Braxton Burmeister, we're probably not going to make a bowl game. Give the young guy a chance.
I think so. I think you could see that. You know, I mean, the winds are blowing pretty strong against Justin Fuente being back here next year. So what the heck, you know, send Bullock out there and give us something different to look at. You know, I know coaches don't think like that. They're always trying to win, you know.
I sat next to a former college quarterback before the Syracuse game, and he got into the stadium early enough to watch warm-ups. And I got in there, and he was like, man, should have seen our quarterbacks throwing the ball in pregame warm-ups. And this is a former college quarterback, and he was just telling me how unimpressed he was with all of them. Bullock threw one into the seats at one point. Apparently, during pregame warm-ups. Like, and we talk about Tech's players not progressing or perhaps even regressing at quarterback or whatever position. And we've seen how much better Hendon Hooker is at Tennessee this year. Let's not forget who, like, Taj Bullock is getting the same coaching as all these other Tech quarterbacks, you know? There's a rumor out there that he's got a little bit of a hitch in his delivery and everything like that. Now, that being said, like Tech needs a quarterback that can do something on the ground, yeah. I think. So if Blumrick can't come back soon, then you would at least be able to think that when it's fourth and one and you want to run the quarterback like they did with Kadem the other night, then you should at least think Bullock would be able to run that play, right? The thing is, though, it's like, does it really matter? I doubt Bullock has the knowledge of the offense to make that much of a difference at this point. I mean, he's a three-star true freshman. Those guys aren't ready.
I'm not actually suggesting he's the path to victory.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Just to have something different to watch.
Do something different. Yeah.
It may look almost the same as Kadem, and at least you can show, hey, here's a young guy getting some reps, and maybe he's the future, but you're not sure.
Yeah.
It's just, with three games left, cue the red lights, you're not burning his red shirt.
That's true. That's true.
An opportunity possibly there. If Burmeister is healthy, is this a team that can still win two out of its last three and get bowl eligibility?
Well, they're playing Miami for one of those games, and as Miami showed this past weekend when they almost lost to Georgia Tech, I mean, Miami's capable of winning just about any game on their schedule outside of that first one against Alabama. They're also capable of losing just about any one of them. I mean, you just don't know which Miami team's going to show up. If good Miami shows up, they could just blow Virginia Tech's doors off. But if bad Miami shows up, Virginia Tech could win the game, yes, if they have Burmeister. Virginia Tech can certainly beat Duke if they have a healthy Braxton Burmeister, and we don't even know Brennan Armstrong's status.
Yeah, we still don't know Armstrong's status.
I believe he said he's feeling better, but I doubt he would go out there and say,
oh, you know what, I'm not going to play.
I'm not going to play.
Right. Yeah. So, and UVA's defense is bad. So, yes, the possibility.
One of the worst in the country.
Yes, absolutely. So, the possibility's there. But you just think about Burmeister at some point. Like, even if he plays on Saturday, we've talked about his throwing shoulder all year long, and now you're talking about an injury to the rib cage on the right side of his body. Basically, the entire throwing side of his body, of his upper body, is messed up. How effective can he really be with that? I mean, he's already played through a lot of pain this year, and it's just doesn't seem likely to me that he's going to be anywhere close to his peak effectiveness. Yeah, I don't think he's been at his peak effectiveness all year because of the shoulder. But now you add ribs to that, and he's probably be a little more hesitant to run with a rib injury, I would think. If you've ever been hitting when you've got raw ribs like that, it's not fun. I mean, I've had to wear a flak jacket for a football game before. It's not fun.
Yeah, he's in the Tough Quarterbacks Hall of Fame now with Al Clark, Michael Brewer. And now Braxton Burmeister.
Well, you know, they finally let him keep it on a bunch of read options, and you know,
until he got hurt.
Yeah,
and Braxton even tried to come back in. I believe he had a helmet on starting the second quarter, but I guess in warmups he just couldn't go.
I mean, I don't see how you could. If you got a, I mean, yeah.
Oh man.
Well, there was one other play I want to touch on before we transition to basketball in the second half. It got a lot of attention on Twitter. Down 14, 5 minutes left, fourth down, Virginia Tech elects to punt from their own 25-yard line. What was your take on that play, the decision?
I remember in 2008 when Virginia Tech had lost Tyrod Taylor and Sean Glennon in the Florida State game, and third-string quarterback Corey Holt was in the game. And Beamer punted down 10 with about 3.5 minutes left in that game. And I remember being furious at the time. And because Beamer thought at that point the offense had been struggling with a third-string quarterback, and he thought his best way to win the football game was to punt the ball, maybe get a muff punt, get a stop, and flip the field position game. And I still don't agree with the Beamer call, because I think Corey Holt had a good enough arm to throw the ball down.
He'd been in the system a while.
Oh, he was a senior. Yeah,
he was a good athlete.
Yeah, exactly. The other one the other night, like, I don't think Virginia Tech had any chance to drive the ball 75 yards and score a touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually agree with Fuente here that the odds were in your favor of scoring by punting, which is sad.
Was a 4th-and-8 or 4th-and-9 or something like that. You look through Virginia Tech's game, there wasn't a lot of times where they threw the ball and got more than 8 or 9 yards.
Right.
It was 4th-and-6.
Fourth and six, okay. Yeah.
That's my thoughts on that. I agree with the decision, which is sad.
Flip side of that decision, though. You're quitting on your players when you don't give them a chance to make that play. I hear you. The logic and the metrics and all that stuff aren't necessarily wrong. But you're sending a message to your players like, I don't think you can do this. I think let's just punt and cross our fingers and hope something good happens, which is the same thing Frank did,
sure,
you know, back in 2008. It's just – and that stuff permeates, you know, as if they don't have enough – issues than to basically quit on your players. And I don't throw the Q word around lightly. I've used it maybe 3 times in the 25 years I've been covering Virginia Tech. I used it to describe a basketball game that I believe Seth Greenberg's team played against Miami one time, where I just basically said they quit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't remember the third instance. It's not a word I throw around lightly, but you kind of quit on him, you know. Checked his sheet, got into his wonky head and said, let's punt, maybe that'll work, you know. And it's without spending a moment to think, what are my players going to think about this?
Well, Peter Moore had a pretty good game.
Here's why I say, like, that strategy was about to work. It was a great punt on the 55 yards
it
all
was.
The way to the 20.
Yeah.
If you got all three timeouts left, right? Or was it just two? It was two.
I think it was two.
Okay. If you could have stopped him right there, you could have got the ball back, you know, around the 30, 40-yard line, or with a good return by Tavion. You know, you could have got the ball back with like 4 minutes left, close to midfield.
Man, that's a lot of ifs.
Well, that's what Justin Fuente said. They were playing the field position.
It's not as big of an if as Virginia Tech completing a pass down the field.
I don't know, man.
Look, it doesn't matter. neither one of them was going to work. Tech didn't lose that game on Friday night. Tech lost that game.
In the years
leading up to Friday night, yes.
So let's talk about one more thing, though, before we switch to basketball. And this is a David Cunningham tweet. I don't know the exact quote. I'm sorry. This is a David tweet while he was participating in the postgame press conference. Fuente said he didn't know that Trey Turner wasn't going to be able to go this week, though it was an injury from Georgia Tech last week. Mentioned that he practiced this week, so it was sort of a surprise. I think the entirety of the fan base knew Trey wasn't going to play.
We talked about it on the podcast last week.
We did. We brought it up. We said, we've heard crack sternum. He's not going to play. His mom was on Twitter saying, they told me not to fly to Boston.
On Tuesday,
yes. So that's just a really odd statement. And it's one of two things, and neither one of them's good. Either Fuente was completely unaware of the health of one of his most important players, or I don't like to use the word lie, he just fibbed in the postgame press conference. It's a really odd situation. And I, unfortunately, in the heat of the moment, went off on it. I quote tweeted it and said, The ongoing disconnect between Justin Fuente and his medical/training staff is stunning. This has been going on for years, a lack of awareness of his players' health and readiness to play. Chris fusses about specific examples almost weekly on the TSL podcast. I probably should have slowed my roll a little bit, but you know, it's in the heat of the moment, and it's an odd situation. Which one is it? Did he not know, or did he just lie about it?
He's always been so guarded about injuries.
Yeah.
And I don't think he had any idea that most of the fan base knew that Trey Turner wasn't going to play in that football game.
Yeah.
And because, you know, head coaches don't sit around all week scouring the internet to figure out what people know. But again, that's where somebody in the communications department or somebody needs to tell him, look, everybody knows Trey Turner wasn't going to play in this football game. Yeah. In which case, he gets up there and instead of saying something like that, he says, yeah, Trey is injured and couldn't be with us this week. Hopefully he has a speedy recovery and can be back next week. And that's that, right? It's just a lack of awareness of fan knowledge, in my opinion, from the program.
Well, and we've also talked about, like Will said, the disconnect between Fuente and his training staff. You've talked about plenty of examples of guys playing the first two snaps.
The first play of the game, Khalil Herbert against Liberty last year, returns the kickoff and can't play. James Mitchell plays five snaps, I think, that game, and then they figure out, oh, we can't play. And then Jermaine Waller starts against Syracuse, and then they figure out after four plays, oh, he can't play. Like, can't figure this out in pregame warmups or throughout the whole week. I mean, it just seems like either a disconnect or just bad decision making there.
And this is a different issue after the was it the Richmond game where James Mitchell got hurt?
Middle Tennessee.
And then Fuente says right after the game, he'll probably be fine. That's different from not. Because it's right after the game, and yes, you don't know. But in that situation, you say, we're not sure. We're going to take a closer look. You hear coaches say it all the time. Oh, we don't know. We'll have to take a closer look at him, do a scan, and then we'll find out.
And normally, Fuente being so guarded about injuries, you would think he would say something like that rather than, oh, yeah, he's fine.
And unfortunately, it just makes you look bad when you say that, and then 2 days later, he's out for the season.
But you know, he's telling – I assume in that situation, he was telling the media what the medical staff told him.
Which the medical staff shouldn't have told him that.
Right. And this isn't just a Justin Fuente era thing. I mean, I remember towards the end of the Beamer era, you know, mistakes being made. Like, I remember J.C. Coleman missed the Alabama game in 2013 with like two sprained ankles. And then they played him the next week against Western Carolina in a game where they didn't need him to play. Just let him get healthy. You're talking about two sprained ankles. Yeah. Right, and of course he got reheard in that game and missed like the next 3 or 4 weeks.
And he was not healthy till the end of the year.
Right, and so that meant Trey Edmonds had to carry the load all by himself, which means he got hurt and was ineffective. So for a while that year, like Virginia Tech had Trey Edmonds and J.C. Coleman both completely ineffective, which left it all on the shoulders of Logan Thomas and a bunch of receivers who weren't FBS caliber players, quite frankly. Yeah. So you know those decisions they build on themselves, man. So this is not just a Justin Fuente thing. And I've said, and I'm not blaming any individual or anything like that, but I think in the off season, like there needs to be a thorough evaluation of Virginia Tech's entire medical process. I mean, for me, it's been building up for almost a decade now, where I think I've seen some issues in there.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I don't know enough about it to say, oh, it's this guy's fault or that guy's fault or anything like that. But I think they need somebody in there who can evaluate things like that and make decisions and figure out if there actually are issues. But from the outside looking in, it seems like there are issues.
So before we move on, speaking of Logan Thomas and those receivers, I just listed 21 games where Tech had bad offensive performances and won one of them. The next one they won was December 28th, 2012, 196 yards
Rutgers.
Against Rutgers in the bowl game, and Virginia Tech won that.
That was a 10-0 going into the fourth quarter. And yeah. That one actually might be the most boring game. And
that game was...
Like,
wow.
It was more boring than the 0-0 Wake Forest. Yes, because absolutely nothing happened.
But Virginia Tech won because Logan Thomas dropped a dime of a touchdown pass late in the game. I remember just beautiful pass, and you're like, where's that been all game, all season, all your career?
Well, we made it through the tough stuff, the Hokie struggles against Boston College on Friday night, and we are going to get into hoops in a second, and I believe Nick actually has some basketball stuff, so let's send it over to our fourth chair.
Well, before I get started, we got to shout out our man Scott Glessner. There's some not-so-good stats, and there are some good stats. I'm going to start with the good. The last five times Virginia Tech has scored less than 7 points, they've averaged 33.4 points the following week. That's bizarre.
That is very interesting.
Well, Duke is coming up.
Tech plays Duke on Saturday, so maybe a chance to keep that trend going.
The over-under. All right, Scott Glessner again. Beamer has outscored in three seasons in his career, 87, 88, 92. Fuente is currently at three from 2018, 2020, and now 2021. This season is 195 to 196 scoring-wise. Wow. So it's getting close. And the last stat, the worst stat, VT has only scored 195 points in the first nine games. That is the lowest in the first nine games since 1989.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that Clemson game was Beamer's first game.
Oh, it was
his very first one on September 12th.
They scored 67.
Welcome to the new job, Frank.
They had 67 yards and scored 10 points.
Right, 67 yards and scored 10 points. It'd be interesting to pull that. Actually, I think I can do that.
The game one. So that was number 10 Clemson at the time.
Right. Let's hit that.
So have a start to a tenure.
So Chris Kinzer had a 48-yard field goal, and John Jeffries had a 92-yard kickoff return, and that's how they got their 10 points.
So no yards right there.
So they had more. They had more yards on one kickoff return than they had no, total
offensive yards.
Oh my gosh, this is a nightmare to look at. It's like, am I looking at stats for Virginia Tech's first possession?
So let's everyone remember here. Like, this is not the first time offense has been a problem.
Yeah.
No. That is correct.
Well, 195 points in a season so far. They scored 10 points combined between the Pitt and BC games. So.
Right. So what was it? 195.
153 was the for combined scores.
So that just shows you like what a 50-50 crapshoot kind of every game is this year for Tech.
And it just
comes down to things like turnovers and whether your quarterback gets hurt.
Well, and something weird happened this game, like you mentioned, every game.
Random events.
This time it's Braxton Bermester getting
hurt. Braxton Bermester gets hurt, you fumble an interception return,
and
batted ball right
for a first down.
This is the craziest stat just surrounding the country that I noticed this week. Teams at the AP poll ranked higher than the playoff committee this week went 10-2. And teams that were ranked higher in the playoff committee than the AP poll went 9-6.
I saw a stat over the weekend, and I forget what it was. It might have been like how many top 25 teams have lost this 42 year.
42 have lost.
Which is an NCAA record.
Most.
And we've still got three games to go. Wow. So all that parity I always complain about. There is parity this year, apparently, except for Georgia.
Once
you get that's what we're talking about.
Destroy everybody.
Georgia is the only great college football team this year.
I mean, I've actually never seen anything like their defense before.
No.
I have no idea how their defense is that good.
Well, Jordan Davis is in the Heisman hunt, a defensive tackle.
Wow.
For all I know, he should probably win it.
Yeah.
I mean, just if he's the best player on that team.
I don't usually watch SEC football, but I guess I need to watch more of Georgia.
I would actually like to watch this year's Georgia defense versus the 2019 LSU offense.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be that would be a really interesting matchup with Joe Burrow.
Well, and LSU almost beat Alabama this weekend in Tuscaloosa. Alabama seemed to be the second best team, but
yeah, I mean, LSU is not a good football team, so you feel like the number two team in the country should handle them pretty easily, but they couldn't do it.
Yeah, I think LSU's 4-5. I looked them up.
They are. 20-14 was the final. LSU had the ball across midfield with 2 minutes left, and the offense just couldn't do anything.
So everybody thinks, Alabama and Georgia, you know, Alabama can give them a run for their money because it's Alabama, but it just doesn't look like they can.
Mm-mm.
I mean, just on paper, it doesn't look like anybody can touch Georgia.
And Michigan State was 3. They lose to Purdue. Oregon did beat Washington.
Yeah, I watched some of that game, but it took them a while to get rolled.
They didn't look dominant.
But yeah.
Ohio State at 5 almost lost to Nebraska.
Who's not good.
And Cincinnati almost lost to Tulsa. So it does seem like Georgia's just going to run away with
it. I just see like the playoffs are going to be a bloodbath.
Did you guys watch Wake Forest and UNC?
I watched the I turned it on like honestly just for like the last couple drives is the only bits I saw because I was working on writing about the Virginia Tech game and maybe I wish I just watched the Wake UNC game instead.
The Wake Forest offense had been killing it for like a month and then they just disappeared in the fourth quarter. I think they got outscored 24-0 in the fourth quarter.
They scored a late touchdown at the very end.
So it was 24-7 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I remember looking, I think it might have been during the Virginia Tech game. It came up on the bottom. It was Wake Forest UNC and the total was 77 over under. And I was like, man, 77 just seems high for any game. They scored 113 combined points in that game.
Right. So I would say somewhere mid third quarter, I was on the Dave Clawson train and they have the 105th ranked total defense in the country. They give up, you know, what is the number? They give up 435 yards a game. And that's what cost them that game against UNC was, you know, the
well,
offense.
Well, they did have those two key interceptions late, which handed UNC field position.
Well, and it wasn't even Sam Howell. It was Ty Chandler, the running back, who went off late. He had a couple of late touchdowns to get UNC back on top.
Yeah.
My goodness, there's a lot of ACC teams in the bottom 25 in total defense. There's Wake Forest is 105. Georgia Tech is 112. Virginia's 122.
Out of 130, by the way.
Out of 130. Duke is 127.
Oof.
Yeah.
I think I have a feeling there's a lot of ACC teams that are like in the bottom 25 of everything.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, now let's transition to basketball and lift our spirits a little bit.
Yes, let's.
Mike Young is 2-0 in opening games, and Virginia Tech has a long, long streak of winning the opening game. And the only time they've played Maine previously before, there's only one, back in 2016, and ironically, that was a banner hanging ceremony for the NIT tournament the previous season. So we'll have another banner hanging kind of ceremony tomorrow night.
For the NCAAs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And I'm trying to remember, I guess the last time they lost a season opener was when they lost to, was it Alabama State in Buzz's second year?
I think so.
Yeah, and we in Tech ended up winning 20 games that year and went to the NIT.
Yeah, and this is the third season for Mike Young. Ironic, Buzz Williams' third season played Maine, the Black Bears.
There you go.
The feared Black Bears. Yep.
So Virginia Tech has been to four straight NCAA tournaments, is that correct?
Well, I mean, yes, but they wouldn't have gone to the one with
COVID. That is correct. COVID,
but yeah.
But the Virginia Tech women's team would have gone to that one, and they didn't get a chance to go.
Yes. Yeah.
That's all you got? All right. Well, thank you, Nick, for that. And that gives us a good transition to hoops, and we're going to get to basketball and the high hopes for this season's Virginia Tech men's basketball team after the break. We will come back. We'll talk about the schedule coming up, especially the non-conference. Easy November, very tough December coming up for this Hokies team. We'll talk about the rotation, the ins, the outs, and how the Hokies can get a win against Maine tomorrow night. We'll take a break here on episode 206 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We welcome you back on episode 206 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Our first episode of crossover season as men's basketball opens up their season tomorrow night from Castle Coliseum. We've already gone through Virginia Tech football's loss to Boston College back on Friday night. Again, we got our usual Monday crew on set. Will Stewart across the way, Chris Coleman to my left, Nick Brown in the fourth chair, Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes, and I'm Jake Lyman. As always, the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. And want to talk about a big commitment this morning, TJ Stewart committing to Virginia Tech Wrestling, continuing to grow that program that I believe they're ranked in the top 10 in all three of the major polls preseason.
That is correct. I saw a tweet from VT Wrestling Twitter, and I apologize, I'm not up to speed on Virginia Tech Wrestling at this point, but we do have off-camera Jack Brizendine sitting there, and he's going to. So they wrestled this past weekend. In
Roanoke?
Salem, I believe.
Salem, yes.
I was busy on the message boards, policing the boards, so I don't know how well that went, but Jack, based on that and based on talking to Tony Roby, is going to do a preview for us soon. What day have we got that slated for?
I'll have it
He will have it to David by Thursday. I think they wrestle again on the 17th against Ohio State.
19th, I want to say. 19th. So they have two meets that weekend, both at Castle, I believe, Ohio State and Gardner-Webb, I want to say, are the two teams. So, so definitely.
Do you know off the top of your head where Ohio State's ranked? I want to say top five. I know that was a big win when they I think
they went up to Columbus and beat them.
Was that last year or?
That was 2019.
Yeah, I remember. Man, Ohio State's just got a great facility for wrestling. I think it's a combination wrestling volleyball facility. You know, built for that specific purpose, you know, and very, very cool facility.
Well, that was a great start to that season. I believe they beat Ohio State, and then was it Northwestern, the Matt on the mound?
When they wrestled out at the baseball stadium.
They're not doing that again this year. No. I believe they are wrestling at Moss Arts Center. I'm not sure which meet that is.
The thing is, like, it's actually going to be warm this week.
It would be perfect to do Ohio State Matt on the mound. Or actually, that's next
the
Friday.
Yeah,
weekend.
Speaking of which, do we know the weather forecast for Saturday?
Yeah, it's going to be in the 60s all week, and as soon as Saturday gets here, it's going to be like 45.
I think it's high of 50 on Saturday.
As long as it doesn't rain.
So, I don't think it's not supposed to rain on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Although, if you were ever going to have a Friday night game, like, I wish this was the Friday night game.
So anyway, back to wrestling. I believe that Stewart is ranked 19th across all weight classes in the country, I think. I haven't had a chance to do my research. It's a big commitment, and donations to the Southeast Regional Training Center help Virginia Tech Wrestling recruit better.
Yes. Helps them bring in those mentors, like James Green came in a few years ago, and I believe he was a big part.
I think Ty Walls is on staff there.
Ty Walls as well.
And some other guys.
So definitely go to southeastrtc.com. You can keep bringing these great recruits to the wrestling program. Wrestling again starts their season next week, and Virginia Tech men's basketball starts their season tomorrow night. A lot of high hopes for this team this season. Unranked, but receiving votes, would be ranked 30th in the AP poll. Projected 5th in the ACC, receiving 5 first-place votes. So definitely a lot of expectations for this team, and rightfully so. A lot of returning players and a lot of experience on this team.
Yeah, well, I mean, they recruit top 10 every year, basically. And they're preseason top 10 just about every year. So they're one of the top 10 programs in the country.
Wait a minute. Who are we talking about?
I'm talking men's basketball.
Oh, we switched
to basketball. My God.
You are not wrong.
But
he is correct, though.
Expectations are high for men's basketball as well. And I'm really glad that basketball season is starting just to give us all something to talk about. Because there's not going to be like a great, great need to break down these last few Virginia Tech football games. Right. Like 10 years from now, we're not going to even remember what happened. So,
And let's be clear about something. People are like, oh, y'all must be hearing a lot about the coaching stuff. No, we are not. There is no information out there about the coaching search, in air quotes.
Witt does not employ a coach search firm generally, because that's more likely when you have leaks and things like that.
He likes to be ninja Witt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, remember with Jim Weaver, the self-appointed committee of one?
Right.
Well, that's Witt when it comes to coaching searches, too. So
anyway,
on to basketball. Very, very excited for two reasons. Number one, they're going to be good. Number two, I'm going to enjoy seeing what a Mike Young team looks like that is completely filled with Mike Young players. Like, every single player on this team was recruited by Mike Young as a specific fit for his system. Yeah. So I'm very excited to see what that looks like. And you know, of course, number three, to give us all something to talk about. And it's also, I'm excited because, you know, maybe not so much the first few games, but it's a challenging non-conference schedule. Like, some of those years in the past, particularly under Greenberg, you didn't know how good you were until late January, after you had a full month of ACC games, and even with Buzz to a certain extent.
And they would very often play like 13 games before they got in the ACC schedule, and most of them were just ridiculous, like 5 games in a row in Castle against lousy teams.
Right, right. Yeah. And this is I mean, I wrote an article a month or so ago. It was called A Schedule Made for Selection Sunday. And that's what this non-conference schedule is. And you know, they're going to start off at Maine, but they're going to get a good road test the next game at Navy. Navy went 15-3 last year. It's a game Virginia Tech most likely will win. And it's going to get them extra points, though, as far as, you know, the tiers, because it's going to be on the road. You know, and that maybe that's worth one seed come Selection Sunday.
Yeah.
Maybe that gets Virginia Tech off the 8-9 line or something like that. You never know. I'm excited for a lot of those reasons. Like, I think we'll know exactly how good we are by the time ACC schedule starts, as opposed to, you know, waiting to 4 or 5, you know, get into the meat of the ACC schedule. We're going to know exactly how good this team is by the end of December.
Well, I went through this morning, actually, and I looked at the schedule between November 24th, which is when the Hokies will open the preseason NIT tip-off against Memphis, and December 29th, when the Hokies play North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. They will play Memphis, who is the 16th-ranked team in KenPom preseason, maybe Xavier, who's 26th, if things sort out the right way. Maryland is 18th. Dayton is 84th. St. Bonaventure, 30th. Duke, 10th. UNC, 40th. All within about a month. So, yeah. Like
and
you said,
all of those games are either on neutral sites or on the road. So, you win 2 or 3 of those games, and then you got your quad one. You got some quad one wins.
Yeah,
I think
good,
Tech only had 3 quad one wins all of last year. I mean, Tech could have that many by the end of December. Maybe even more by the end of December.
And there will be a lot of visibility built in that early schedule. The Navy game's going to be on CBS Sports Network. Merrimack's going to be on RSN. Don't get me started on RSN.
Oh, God. I mean, I guess I'll have to – oh, no, that'll be at home. Never mind.
St. Francis is going to be on the ACC Network. Memphis, ESPN2, and I assume the second game will be
ESPN,
on
ESPN2.
Yeah, and then Maryland's going to be on ESPN or ESPN2. Wake and Cornell on the ACC Network, St. Bonaventure, ESPN2, Duke, ESPN2, North Carolina, ESPN2. And this is all before January, mm-hmm. So it's very cool.
Yeah, all before the ACC schedule really gets rolling. Duke and UNC in that ACC schedule, Tech also gets Wake Forest at home at the very beginning of December. So that's another game in there that Wake Forest maybe not as good as some of these other teams on here.
They'll be better than they were the last couple of years, most likely. And, you know, it gives you an opportunity to face an ACC team and probably start out 1-0. It's one of those schedules, man, where you always try to strike the happy balance as a basketball coach where you expect to go to the NCAA tournament and you want to schedule to try to get yourself the highest seed possible. But you don't want to overschedule and turn an NCAA tournament team into the number one seed in the NIT.
Yes.
Right. So it's all about striking that balance. But I think, you know, barring like an injury to a key player, like either like Keve Aluma or Storm Murphy, I think Mike Young's on the right side of that.
Well, the Hokies do get a few tune-up games early, including Maine tomorrow night in Castle Coliseum on KenPom. Maine, 333rd out of 356,
right.
And their offense is 352nd. So,
yeah.
Again, this is just projections from KenPom, but obviously Maine, by KenPom standards, the worst team the Hokies will play this season.
Yeah.
So hopefully a good start for Virginia Tech. And we look at this team, Mike Young said it's the first time he's ever had a team where they can shoot 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. Storm Murphy, Hunter Couture, Naheem Aline, Justin Mutz, and Keve Aluma. Pretty solid starting five for Virginia Tech.
Yeah, right, I really think so, particularly from a shooting standpoint. And now their knowledge of the offense. I know Storm Murphy's new, but he's not new to the Mike Young system.
Yeah.
So he'll fit right in there easily. There's going to be no transition period for him. I thought Virginia Tech was a good offensive team basketball last year, despite the fact that they went the majority of games with only 3 shooters on the court.
Yeah, they started Tyrese Radford and Wabisa Beattie.
And Radford improved his shooting last year, but he was never one of those guys that was going to knock down, you know, 2 or 3 a game for you. It was going to be like 1 or 2 a week.
Yeah, and he brought a different skill set to the offense, which was valuable. But, yeah, I'm pretty jacked to see 5 guys that can move and pass and shoot what Mike Young can do.
Yeah, exactly. I think that part's exciting. David Gasson has apparently had a really, really impressive offseason, enough for Virginia Tech's social media account to make a video of him, you know, drilling 3-pointers, which is exciting because he's a 6'9", and if he can be that stretch
four. Is he a 4?
Yes.
Is that where that works?
He can play the 5, but it's not ideal.
And Mutz is more of a 3, maybe?
No, Mutz is a 4.
Okay.
Definite 4, all the way.
Will Gasson ever wind up at the 3?
Gasson is actually more likely to play the 3 than Mutz.
Okay.
I think long term he has a more balanced skill set, even though, you know, he's taller. I think he might have a better handle for a 3. Okay. But I think they're both ideal 4s. I think if either one of them would have to play the three this year, it would be because of an injury. I think. Some of that might be dependent on matchup. Maybe when you play UNC and they throw all those tall dudes out there, you could put Gasan at three for defensive purposes or something like that. But it would be matchup dependent. But I really think it's going to be he'll spend the vast majority of his time at the four.
So let's sorry to hijack the podcast, but who's the starting lineup here? You've got Storm Murphy at point guard, mm-hmm. Nahim Aline at shooting guard.
Him and Couture at wing, they're interchangeable.
Right. Yeah. Two and three.
So they'll both start mm-hmm. and play those wing positions. And then you've got Mutz at the four and Aluma at the five.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Gasan, I would guess right now, first guy off the bench. Mm-hmm. So there's some, the bigger question this year is depth. You don't have a full complement of scholarship players. What is your depth on the wing going to be like? I think will be the bigger question for this team than anything else. I think they'll be fine in the post. I think they'll be fine at point guard because you got three guys who can run the point. You got Storm Murphy, Hunter Couture did it last year, and you got Sean Padula, who's a freshman. Yeah. So I think you've got plenty of point guards. You can't afford an injury on the wing, in my opinion. You'll have Darius Maddox coming off the bench that can play either one of those spots. You can play Storm Murphy and Padula together if you wanted to, but it's not ideal.
You look at the paint, there's so much depth at the four and the five. Lynn Kidd, John Ogiako, David Gasan, Jalen Haynes, the freshman, mm-hmm. could get some minutes there, all behind Mutz and Aluma. But like you mentioned, on the wing, it feels like it's really just Couture, Aline, Maddox. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to maybe manufacture some depth there, like you said, maybe play Storm Murphy at the two or move Gasan up to the three.
Yeah, and you've got to find a way. You got to stay out of foul trouble with those two spots. Because, if Hunter Couture picks up two fouls in the first, 5 minutes of the game, then you're playing 15 straight minutes with Nahim Aline and Darius Maddox in there with no substitutions. You don't have anybody else unless you wanted to play two point guards, which isn't ideal. Or unless you wanted to put Gasan at the three, which maybe he can do some, but I still don't think it's ideal. Mike Young's seen him play, and I haven't. So we'll find out. So that's the biggest concern for this team. And also, I will say, defensively.
Yep.
One of the questions I had about the Mike Young hire is his defenses at Wofford never ranked highly in defensive efficiency. Like, his offenses were always good, but a lot of the defensive efficiency ranks when he was at Wofford were bad. So when he got to Virginia Tech, he hired Chester Frazier, who was a tremendous defensive coach. He came up in the Illinois program when it was at its best from a defensive standpoint. He actually played for that Illinois team that Virginia Tech beat in the NCAA tournament in 2007. So he came up as a defensive-minded coach, and I thought for all intents and purposes maybe like served as maybe a defensive coordinator type for the Hokies for the last couple of years. Now he's gone. He went back to Illinois, his alma mater, as their top assistant. He wants to be a head coach one day and wants to have as much on his resume as possible. So how is Virginia Tech going to be defensively this year without Chester Frazier and without Wabisa Beattie, who was a tremendous defensive point guard, and Tyrese Radford, who was a very good defensive
guard. They're two best perimeter defenders.
Right, exactly. So I've no question in my mind that offensive stats mm-hmm. and offensive efficiency ratings and things like that, they're going to spike this year because this is an ideal Mike Young team. What are they going to be defensively? Are they going to stay the same, or are they going to get worse? I don't know they can get better, to be honest with you, because I just think that's a lot of defensive loss in one offseason.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this is going to make up for it. I think the defensive efficiency will drop. But was it Mutz that was bragging on? He's been working on his defense.
His goal this year is to be an all-conference, all-defensive team.
Yeah.
Man, or defensive player of the year in the conference or something like that. But yes, he's really, really focused on his defense.
Yeah.
And Aluma last year, Virginia Tech was a pretty good shot blocking team last year.
Yes.
So it's possible that, just with some shot blockers on the inside, you can erase whatever perimeter defensive issues you might have as far as getting beat off the dribble or anything like that.
Yeah, and Aluma's not a classic get right in front of you and block the shot in your face.
No, more of a...
He's that guy that comes from across the defense. He comes from behind. He's really good at that.
And Mutz and Aluma down low could be much better defensively in the paint than we saw a year ago if they continue to develop. But again, the question is on the outside. A lot has been made about the Storm Murphy addition and how much he brings offensively in contrast with Wabi Sabidi, who really was, he would dribble across half court, pass it, and right. and kind of get out of the way. Does the offensive addition kind of offset some of the defensive loss as well?
Absolutely. You know, I think the main thing Tech will miss with Radford is on the offensive end at least, is those junkyard dog points.
Yep.
You don't know exactly where those will come from this year.
And they also didn't have a lot of guys that could go coast to coast with a rebound, and he could do it.
Yeah, yeah, yes. you're exactly right. So, but I think those two things offensively will be more than offset by having a team full of Mike Young-style players that are fit for his offense. Yeah. That's more important than anything when you run a system offense. And this is going to be a system program. This is not going to be a talent program. Under Mike Williams. Yes, you – or Mike Williams. why don't I call him Mike Williams? There's too many Mikes, man. There's Mike Young and Mike Jones. Gosh, so I'm just – now I'm making up Mikes.
I don't even know who Mike Williams
is.
Mike Williams is a wide receiver for the Los Angeles Chargers.
Still.
Yes.
Okay. There's been a couple Mike Williams wide receivers through the years. Anyway.
When I was at Tech, I was friends with a girl who dated a Tech baseball player named Mike Williams.
A lot of Mike Williams.
There we go.
just so many Mikes. At any rate, this is always going to be a system program and a system offense under Mike Young. And yes, you expect as you win, the recruiting rankings will get better. But the most important thing is system fit, and it always will. System fit and player development. And so far, you know, what the 2 years of evidence we have right now is he's been outstanding as far as those two things go.
And I want to look at the wings as well with Couture and Aline out there. It seems like I always noticed this throughout all of last season. Neither of them, they couldn't both have a great game. It seemed like when Aline got 25 points, Couture would go 0 for 4 and have 2 points.
And then pick up 2 charges.
And then, yeah, he always had a charge. That covering Virginia Tech basketball, I like to do the Hunter Couture charge alert on Twitter.
David Cunningham tracks it all.
He keeps track of that.
He does.
That's actually, now that it's done, I can tell the truth. That's the biggest reason we hired David Cunningham was to track Hunter Couture's charges.
The Excel spreadsheets for David Cunningham. But it seemed like the opposite. Hunter Couture would go 6 of 6 from 3 in one game, and Nyheim Aline would do almost nothing. Right. Can those two guys kind of both put it together and be more consistent than they have been their first two seasons?
Probably. Entering their third year in the program, third year in the offense, third year playing together. You would expect that to happen. Yeah. Now, the thing about Mike Young's offense is they're slower and more methodical. They use a lot of shot clock. Like, when you look at the tempo standings, like, UVA is going to be last or almost last
close
every year in tempo. Virginia Tech's not going to be that far ahead of them.
Wasn't Tech roughly at, if you do a scale of 0 to 100, where 100 is the slowest, wasn't Tech right around 90, somewhere around in there?
Probably.
I can't remember what.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I want to say in tempo they ranked, like, 270th or 280th out of 350.
Drew Scott put it in his article the other day, I think. So.
But they're a very slow-tempo team. So there is a limited amount of possessions in a Virginia Tech game. So that means if both of those guys are on, then you're going to really use those possessions at max efficiency. But if one of those two guys is off, you know, you might have a limited game offensively. But there's enough offensive weapons on this team. Like this year, Virginia Tech is very, very capable of putting 5 starters on the court. Every single one of them is capable of scoring in double figures. I mean, there will be games this year, and I'm not saying it will happen against, you know, the best competition the Tech face. There will be some games this year where all 5 of Tech's starters score in double figures, in my opinion.
You're roughly correct. In possessions per game, Virginia Tech was number 273 in the country.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Virginia Tech, we mentioned – not a lot of depth on the wing. I want to talk about Darius Maddox. He's kind of been put in a tough spot here. His second year, he sees Joe Bamisil transfer, Jalen Cohn transfer, and now he's kind of in a spot where he has to step up or else the Hokies pretty much have nobody else out there.
Good development track for Darius Maddox, I think. You know, wasn't asked to play a ton as a freshman. I do remember him getting into a game like last December, and it was a home game. But it was on one of those RSN networks that I can't get at home, so I had to go to Champs to watch, and I was the only person in the entire bar. It was great, great game watching experience. But I remember they brought him into that game late, and he drilled 3 3-pointers in a row.
Really?
And I think he went.
I do remember.
He
that.
Made. I think he made was like 3 of 4 or 3 of 5 for the season, and he made all 3 of them in that game, and they were all within like a minute or two of each other. So, like, I do think he seems to be a good shooter. That's a very, very small sample size. But I don't think he'd have the green light like that, or I don't think he would have been recruited to Virginia Tech as a guard unless Mike Young knew he could shoot the ball. So I would envision him being a guy off the bench who can make outside jumpers for Virginia Tech. But yeah, he's gonna be a guy who's gonna have to get you, you know, 15 a game, 15 to 20 a game, you know, depending on the night, maybe more than that if there's foul trouble. So he's gonna be a very valuable player for Tech this year.
I mean,
he was 3 of 7.
Well, yeah. They all three came
all
in
three,
that
all
game.
All three happened in that one game.
All in a row, too.
Yep.
We mentioned the depth down low as well. Talked about David Gasson. I want to talk Lynn Kidd and John Ogiako. Mm-hmm. Lynn Kidd, a highly recruited guy, transferred from Clemson this year. And then John Ogiako, there was a lot of hype around him. You see him on the court last year, and he just looked like a different person. So much more, so much bigger, and but still lacking some of the intricacies of still playing basketball.
It was tough because he was hurt. And also last year, COVID shut down their offseason conditioning and skills work. Like, you know, but before a regular practice starts, you know, you're allowed a certain amount of time with the coaches every week as a player to develop individual skills. And that time was taken away from them last year. And plus he was hurt. So he wasn't in great shape last year, and he was not afforded – I mean, he needs that kind of work. He's a raw player. That's the type of work he needs in the offseason. Yep. Fortunately, he's been able to have that work this year, so I think he'll be a better player for the Hokies. It'll be interesting to see how they use him and they use Lynn Kidd, because I think Ogiako – or excuse me, let's talk about Lynn Kidd. Lynn Kidd has a reputation of being a pretty advanced offensive player for his age, but well behind the curve defensively. So – how do you balance that if you're Mike Young? One of your backup centers is better at offense and the other is better at defense. And how do you divide up that playing time in maybe the 10 minutes a game where you're not going to have Kevin Olumo on the court?
Yeah. So let's. This is part of the discussion we're leaving out. Ogiako at this point is a junior, listed as a junior, 6'10", 245. Lynn Kidd is listed as a sophomore, 6'10", 240. So we're talking – so let's remember – always remember what class are these guys and how big are they.
Right. Yes.
And appreciate you saying that because I couldn't remember if Kidd was better offensively or defensively. I can't remember his story. Wasn't he a pretty highly rated recruit coming out of
top 100-ish, probably. Yeah. I mean, now what you have to remember, you can't compare football recruiting to basketball recruiting because there's 85 scholarship players on a football team and just 13 on a basketball team. So really, like, the number 100 player in the country for basketball would be like the number 600 or 700 player in the country for football.
Yeah. It sounds good.
It sounds good, but what it is for, it's like basically 3.5-star recruit, 3.3-star recruit. If you broke stars down into decimal points and everything, but they still give them 4 stars for basketball. But the football equivalent to that would be a 3-star recruit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, in basketball, it seems like there's maybe 4 or 5-star recruits every single year, and then rest are high 4 stars, low 4 stars. There's a lot less contrast.
I've always said that, you know, there were too many 4-star recruits in football, and I also think there are too many in basketball simply because, like, people compare it to football, and that's a mistake to compare it to football because it's not the same thing.
So we've talked about the outside. I want to talk about Justin Lutz and Keve Aluma. I think that is the strength of Virginia Tech's team. Those two guys down in the paint. Aluma, he was named as a first-team All-ACC team, was second in ACC Player of the Year voting, and Justin Lutz seemed to be coming along later on in the season. These two guys down low could be the strength of the Hokies team.
And they're versatile players. They can beat you from the inside or they can beat you from the outside. And this is what I talk about player development, Mike Young, and this is where he seems to be outstanding. Is, you know, Keve Aluma, before he enrolled at Virginia Tech, was 0 of 1 for his career from three-point range. And then he goes out there last year and shoots about 35%, right? And then Justin Mutz, I think, was like 2 of 18 for his career from three-point range. Before
I think it was 2 of 19.
2 of 19. Okay. 2 of 19 from his career from three-point range before he got to Virginia Tech. And then last year he comes out there and drills him, what, a 33% clip or something like that. So just the shooting development of these guys, and that's why I'm optimistic about Gasson this year. Like, if he follows that same player development path as the other two bigs in the program, I actually think he has like more natural ability as a shooter than those other two guys. So I think the ceiling is quite high there. So I'm extremely excited about what I've seen from the development of those big guys with their shooting. And then you saw Mutz in the NCAA tournament, like when he went off against Florida it was against Florida, yes. And he was making three-pointers, and then at one point in that game, the Florida defender was like, man, I really got to close down on him strong, and then Mush just put him on the floor, went right by him, and threw down that just massive dunk. Yeah, I mean, just when he's on, man, he is a really, really hard player to guard.
This could be the most exciting team that we've seen for Virginia Tech men's basketball in a while. Everybody can shoot. You've got Mutz and Aluma who can make plays in the paint on both ends of the floor. Mm-hmm. It seems like this is going to be, at the very least, a very fun team to
watch. Going
to
be,
and it's going to be different, though. You know, when you talk about exciting basketball teams, you tend to think guys running up and down the floor and all that kind of stuff. This is, I predict that when this team is operating at peak efficiency, you're going to see the ball come down to the offensive end, and a bunch of passes go like this, and then an open shot.
Yeah.
And then the next time down the floor, and the next time down the floor. And that's just as much fun to watch. If you're a basketball fan, that's as much fun to watch as a dog.
Now, Virginia Tech fans, all right, so you gotta remember how, like, during the Buzz Williams era, Virginia Tech fans would make fun of UVA for running that slow pace and boring offense and everything like that. This team is going to be more similar to a UVA team than that run-and-gun Buzz right. Williams team. Yeah. Like, this team is not going to have the ability in the full court in transition. I mean, that Buzz Williams team's had two players who were currently in the NBA. J-Rob had 11 points the other night for the Bucks in over 20 minutes, you know? Nice. And Nikhil starts for the Pelicans. And Ahmed Hill is, like, he's a G League. He's been a G League guy. He's a pro player. Yeah. I mean, that team was awesome in transition with a lot of great athletes. And they could also run a half-court offense because they had an NBA point guard and an NBA shooting guard. But this team is going to be different. They're not going to crush you in transition, particularly now that there's no Tyrese Radford. But they are going to be extremely methodical and efficient in the half-court. And if you like that type of basketball, you're really going to like this team.
I'm looking forward to seeing what Storm Murphy can do in transition. I mean, and we know that he can run the offense in the half-court. And I'm not saying he's going to be Tyrese Radford going coast to coast. But I'll be interested to see what he can do.
The addition of Storm Murphy definitely raised expectations for Virginia Tech this year. I went through and looked at some of the preseason projections. Joe Lunardi, his first bracketology, this was put out 2 months ago, has the Hokies as a 9 seed again this year, playing LSU in the first round.
That's our perennial spot in the NCAA tournament, a 9 seed.
It's going to be higher than that.
It should. Yeah, I think it has the potential to be higher. Like I said earlier, my only concern is maybe we overscheduled a little bit. Like, yeah. I'm afraid... That's my only concern. This is a definite NCAA tournament team, in my opinion. Definite. And I worry that, like, they're only going to end up with, like, 20 wins or something like that instead of 22 or 23, and they're going to end up on that 8-9 line. But, again, it's a tough act to balance. But, hey, look, man, if Virginia Tech has, like, 3 or 4 quadrant one wins by the end of December, then I don't think we're going to have to worry about that, because then they've still got – a bunch more ACC games to pick up even more. You know, they could end up with, like, you know, 7 or 8 quadrant one wins this year. And in that scenario, they would not be on the 8-9 line, in my opinion.
Most ACC road wins would be considered quadrant one. Right. So
back to talking about the schedule, a couple things. The out-of-conference schedule, I think that Memphis game is extremely intriguing because, number one, they got Landers Nolley playing for them. Number two, you know that Penny Hardaway can recruit. They got some great players on that team.
I believe they just signed another top five guy about a month ago.
You know, what, they got 17 of them now? You know, they're recruiting very well. So you're going to see, not only is there the Landers Nolley subplot, but you're going to see Mike Young's coaching acumen against Penny Hardaway's recruiting acumen.
Yes, this is the old coaching/player development versus recruiting.
Pure talent.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be real interesting to watch.
Right.
And then I would have to pull up the schedule to get this stuff exactly right, but the ACC schedule makers are actually sending Virginia Tech to Duke and North Carolina during Christmas break.
Yes.
And I think they're playing at UVA maybe even during that whole Christmas break.
Mm-hmm. I think
so they're not sending great opponents into Castle while the students are on Christmas break, which I think is fantastic.
Tech only plays Duke once, and that is December 22nd, I believe, at Cameron.
Right, and there's a 3-game stretch either in late January or February.
It's in February.
Where there's, three games in 6 days in Blacksburg against high-profile teams.
So it's February 12th, Virginia Tech plays Syracuse or North Carolina?
I have it in front of me.
Syracuse. That's on my birthday.
Syracuse on the 12th, UVA on the 14th, and then North Carolina on the 19th.
Right. And the UVA game's a big Monday game.
Yes.
Right? Wow. So that's going to be one heck of a week.
And
the students are going to be there. It's not like in the past where you'd say like, oh, number four UVA is coming to town on January 5th. Thanks for that, right?
So so they're at Duke on December 22nd, at North Carolina on December 29th, at Virginia on January 12th. And believe it or not, the students are maybe...
Virginia Tech's winter break ends the 17th, I believe. So as long as UVA is on that same...
Now, the home games during that stretch are Pittsburgh and NC State and Notre Dame on January 15th. Notre Dame's
They haven't been so good recently. I'm not sure how good they're going to be.
And Notre Dame
year.
On the 15th, some students will be back in Blacksburg at that point. That's the Saturday before classes start again.
Right.
So really, it's I believe on New Year's Day, Tech plays Pitt. Mm-hmm. And then the 4th, Tech plays NC State. So those are really the only two games in Castle that won't have a full student section.
Which is great. So we're used to complaining about them sending really good teams into Castle during Christmas break, and they're not this year.
UVA's Christmas break ends January 19th.
There we go.
So
they will not have
that game again is January 12th.
A week before that. Yeah. Duke is the highest rated team in KenPom that Virginia Tech currently has on their schedule. They are 10th. Hokies again play them 3 days before Christmas in Cameron Indoor. So that's probably the best you're going to get Duke. Probably not a ton of Cameron crazies going to be there.
And I wish Tech got them at home this year. But if you're going to play them on the road, that's the time to do it. But tell me like the last season where Duke hasn't been overrated.
Like the Zion? Well,
They went to the Elite Eight that year.
Right, yeah. They should have done better. That, like, when's the last time they actually played to their talent level?
Can't think of it.
All these rankings are because of the name of their head coach.
Not anymore after this year.
But it's going to be interesting to see next year. Yeah,
Coach K's farewell tour. That's the only stop the Hokies have again. December 22nd.
By the way, the ticket price, the lowest for Cameron that game, is $475.
Really,
$475.
$475?
Yes.
For Virginia Tech at Duke?
Well, yeah.
That's hard to get tickets at Duke basketball.
For the whole...
This is Coach K's final year.
Yeah, I went through every seat's going to be at a home game. Even when they hosted the exhibition versus Winston-Salem State, the cheapest was in the 300s.
Yeah, that's how it's going to be at Duke this year.
Interesting.
So I do want to go through... We mentioned Joe Lunardi has the Hokies as 9 seed as of now, but again, that was 2 months ago. Things could have changed in his model... Since then, John Rothstein, who we sleep in May, he's the he is kind of the mascot for college basketball, I would
say, really
on
is.
Twitter.
Yeah.
He has the Hokies as one of his 5 Dark Horse Final Four contenders. So Rothstein is high on the Hokies. Hokies currently the 39th ranked team in KenPom. So some hype growing around Virginia Tech, and again, with a tough schedule, there's a chance they can find themselves in that 4-5 line where they were back in 2018.
And I want to talk about expectations for this year. And we're going to get this question a lot. And I talked about it in last week's preview that I wrote. And I'm sure we'll get it as a question on the podcast today is, do you think Virginia Tech is a first-round team, second-round, Sweet 16, Elite 8, whatever? I think they're an NCAA tournament team, and I don't think you can make predictions past that because you don't know what the matchup is that they're going to get, you know? And you don't know what kind of luck is going to fall their way. Like, the year Virginia Tech was a 4 seed. Obviously, they beat the 13 seed in the first round. That's a great matchup. But then Liberty, the number 12 seed, beat the number 5 seed Mississippi State that year. So Virginia Tech got to play the 12 seed instead of the 5 seed to make the Sweet 16.
Right.
Last year, if Virginia Tech had made one more shot and beaten Florida, they would have played 15 seed Oral Roberts in the second round and might have been a Sweet 16 team last year, in which case I think they'd be top 15 in the preseason this year in a lot of the polls. So that's that perception. You make one more shot and all of a sudden everybody has you much higher ranked the next year, based on perception.
Or Roberts did beat Florida.
They did beat Florida, but you know, it's one of those things where you just get there and see what the matchups are and what the seeding is and everything like that. I think Virginia Tech, depending on the matchups, has a chance to make a deep NCAA tournament run, but with the bad matchup and a bad shooting night, remember when Mike Young's team got knocked out by Kentucky in the second round his last year at Wofford. And it was such a close game, it might have even gone to overtime. But Fletcher McGee had, like, uncharacteristically the worst shooting game of his career.
It's like one of eight or something.
Right. I think he wasted all his shots against Seton Hall the two nights before.
Right. So, like, what if he just had your normal Fletcher McGee game? And that's nothing to do with
Fletcher
coaching.
McGee is the all-time three-point shooting leader in NCAA history, correct?
I don't know.
Yes. Okay. He broke it against Kentucky, ironically.
And okay. He went one of eight.
Right. So, and that has nothing to do with coaching. That's just...
Guy didn't hit his shots that day.
He just didn't make his shots that day. Right. So it's... That's just the way basketball is. So my expectations this year are to go to the NCAA tournament and then let the chips fall where they may.
This is why you need to go every year.
Yeah, man. You go every year, you'll eventually knock that door down.
1 year you lose to a 16 seed, and the next year you win a national title.
Yeah.
Fans are not happy with us saying that right there. You mentioned going to the NCAA tournament. I want to take a step back. The ACC, it doesn't feel like there is a dominant team in the ACC this year. You look at Duke, and again, they're 10th in KenPom. They're going to be a highly rated team, but they always seem to underperform. Is this the best chance Virginia Tech has had to win the ACC in a long time?
So certainly win the regular season. And Virginia Tech got first place votes.
Five first place votes.
I think that's probably the first time they've gotten first place votes.
Yeah, even in Buzz's best year, I think they only got one first place vote.
Right.
They were picked fifth in the ACC, but it was only with one first place vote.
Okay, yeah. So to me, like the disparity in first place votes this year, there's more teams getting first place votes. Yeah. And I think Duke is getting picked first based on reputation and emotions of
and
Coach
recruiting
K's
rankings.
Last year
they got some good players
like
coming in.
Right. But like I said, when's the last time, you know, the sum equaled the whole of the parts at Duke?
Yep.
It's been a while, in my opinion. So I do think the ACC is open this year. I mean, you saw Luke Hancock on the ACC Network pick Virginia Tech to win the regular season, and that's just not something that would have happened very often before. I'm not saying they're going to do that.
Right.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
But they are pickable.
Pickable. I believe six teams receive first place votes this year in the ACC, which means it's basically a toss-up. Yeah. Especially in a 20-game ACC season.
So if you have a team like Tech that plays where the sum of the parts is – the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, mm-hmm. then that's a team that can excel above what's expected of them. Whereas you take Duke and UNC, maybe they won't. I mean, UNC's got a whole new coaching staff, right?
Yeah, they do. So they're an unknown. Yeah.
Yes.
Like we knew, you know, Roy Williams is a legendary coach, a Hall of Famer. How is this staff going to do? We don't know if they can coach or not.
Right.
We know they can recruit. Whoever coaches at UNC is going to be able to recruit, right? but to me, like, I look at three teams in this league, like Florida State, consistent, same team every year under Leonard Hamilton.
Yes.
UVA, consistent, same team every year basically under Tony Bennett. And I think Virginia Tech under Mike Young has a chance to be right there. I'll go out on a limb here and say that their ACC regular season champion this year will be one of those three teams.
Florida State, Virginia, or Virginia Tech?
Yes.
Regular season champion.
Regular season.
Okay.
Because you never know what's going to happen in a tournament.
Yeah. Georgia Tech won it last year,
yes.
Right?
Right.
Well, got some COVID help.
Yes.
And with college basketball, it seems like the trend is you either recruit top 10 players like the Blue Bloods do, or you get good players, develop them, and then when they're seniors, you hope your seniors are better than the other team's freshmen.
Right.
Like Texas Tech, they went to the national championship a few years ago. Sure. Baylor last year just won a national championship.
Right, and you know, Gonzaga made the national championship last year. And I mean, you've seen Loyola Chicago make a couple of deep NCAA tournament runs now, and just so many teams that are making deep postseason runs, and if not winning the national championship, then getting close. Villanova. I mean, Villanova recruits well, but they're not all. He doesn't have a bunch of top one and done. Exactly. So, and I know Virginia Tech falls squarely on the player development side of things. That's how they have to win in college basketball. That's how they have to win in football, in my opinion. I think it takes a certain. I think it takes a certain program to bring in those one-and-done type guys for whatever reason, whether it's the history of your program, like Kentucky or North Carolina, they're just going to attract those guys no matter what. Or whether it's Baylor for other reasons that some of those guys get attracted. But I think Virginia Tech has to do it the opposite way, and that's why, you know, Mike Young's the perfect fit for the program right now.
Well, and tons of experience for Virginia Tech this year again. Storm Murphy, a grad transfer. Keve Aluma, lots of experience. Justin Mutz is playing in what feels like his fifth season, but I think it's only his fourth just with three different teams. So lots of experience for the Hokies, a chance to make a run in not only the ACC, but also the NCAA tournament. Want to check in with YouTube. Nick, any good questions in the chat today?
Yeah, first I wanted to mention there's a weird injury update on Trey Turner. Fuente said this is the strangest injury he's ever seen, and Trey Turner basically has air trapped in his neck.
Okay, that's what I heard on Friday night.
We heard air bubbles in his esophagus.
And they're very concerned about his ability to fly.
Yes,
and that's why he didn't travel to Boston College.
He said he's been looked at by everybody under the sun.
Right.
Weird.
And it's just completely strange. Changa Hodge is back.
Yep, he played.
He was dressed on Friday.
Hodge played for the first time.
He's the fastest ACL, or he told Fuente when he tore his ACL, he wanted to be the fastest guy to return from an ACL tear.
You have to admire that work ethic. But the problem is the guy hasn't played in
that too. And he has two torn ACLs. And yeah.
Any update on Braxton?
He said he will play if he can go. So that's another
look, that's an acceptable answer.
Yeah.
That's an acceptable answer. I mean,
he will play if he goes.
I don't know. Look, even if he knew Burmeister couldn't play this week, he needs to come out there and say that he might play. So, and let Duke prepare for that.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Duke will have to prepare for a few different quarterbacks.
That's an totally acceptable answer to me.
Nothing said on Blumrick, though, and he said James Mitchell will somehow participate in the senior festivities. Do you want to answer football questions?
Sure.
Okay.
As long as it's not about who's the next coach going to be or when are they going to fire Justin. You notice we avoided that in the football half of the podcast.
Okay, so then what are the most important things to salvage at the end of the season? Not even just winning games. What are the most important things to salvage?
Alex Orgy's number one on the list.
Players. Keep as many key players as you can. You always have to worry about the transfer portal this year. There's going to be, and I want to warn everybody, whether Justin Fuente is the head coach or somebody else, there's going to be a massive amount of attrition between now and next year.
Yeah.
Because they have to get back down to the 85 level. And the NCAA is letting teams sign more players this year to make up for transfer portal losses. It's a huge mess. It's been poorly managed, in my opinion. Imagine that. Yes.
No way.
So there's going to be a ton of attrition no matter what. I'm really, really worried about Tech's wide receiver room and the attrition they're going to face. I mean, I think Trey Turner's going to try his hand at the NFL. I think Tavion Robinson will be back, although if he wasn't, who could blame him? I mean, considering the passing offense, the state of it.
By the way, he's number 12 in receptions in Virginia Tech history. I think that's what I read.
He broke 100 against Georgia Tech.
No. If you're Jaden Payut, I'd be out if I were him. I mean, you're in the two deep. You haven't caught a pass. Dwayne Lofton, you're in the two deep. Dwayne Lofton came to Virginia Tech because his high school coach was coached by Justin Fuente. And he comes in here and he's in the two deep as a true freshman. He's caught two passes. Jalen Jones is in the two deep as a true freshman. He's caught zero passes. Like, I'm afraid we're going to lose all those guys because why would you want to play somewhere where you're just not going to touch the football, even if you're in the two deep? And that's just the way it is these days in college football. I'm not blaming anybody for that. And like I said, I wouldn't blame those guys a bit if they wanted to go somewhere else. And so it's important, I think, just to salvage that group. And you don't want to base your coaching decision solely on this as far as who you hire if you do fire Fuente. But it would be ideal to have a head coach who can get at least a couple of those guys to stay and say, look, you're not going to have another season where you're not going to catch any passes. You know, that's ridiculous, and we're going to have a better passing offense in the future. Because if those guys left, let's see, Trey would be gone. Tavion would stay. Caleb Smith would stay. You could potentially lose four of your top six or three of your top six or something like that. And it'd just be a scary situation. So part of it to me is like you're going to lose players to transfer. But you can't make the Justin Fuente decision based on that. Because guess what? You're going to lose players to transfer if you keep Justin Fuente. You have a better chance of keeping Jaden Payut with somebody else, in my opinion.
Yes, because they could sell their new offense
exactly,
to him.
Exactly. Right. Yep. So part of that to me is like, I wish I could push the fast forward button and just get to the end of the season with a couple, few pauses to watch basketball games, of course, and then figure out what everything's going to happen in the offseason, because these last three games themselves, they're just so inconsequential to Virginia Tech football long term.
So if there is a coaching change, then it's up to the new coach to make the pitch to the players who are still on the team. And to me, the pitch would be stick with us through the spring. Here's what I'm telling you. I'll tell you this, this, and this. Stick with us through the spring and see what you think. See if I'm telling the truth. See if things unfold the way I say they're going to. Because wide receivers in particular, I think, can bounce and just go play somewhere the following fall, even if they've been through spring with their previous team. So that's the argument I would use if I was a new coach.
And it's a little different this year, though, because there's going to be so many guys in the portal because you got to get down to 85. But you're not going to have – a lot of schools aren't going to have room either. It's more players than there are spots available.
Yes.
So how do those players manage that themselves?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just going to be a giant mess.
Well, and it could be a situation similar to when Mike Young came in. He would obviously, both these guys ended up transferring it eventually, but he brought Landers Nolley and he brought Tyrese Radford back, and they ended up playing key roles. So it could be something like that where the new coach is able to say to Jaden Paiute or maybe even Trey Turner, say, hey, come back one more year and just see what this offense looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And because, you know, it's just as much an unknown entering the portal as it would be, because you'd be going to another situation with another offense, learning a new system, and you'd be doing the exact same thing at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, you may. So we should probably make the editorial decision that we're going to closely track everybody who enters the portal.
Right.
I mean, I know they keep a database of this stuff on 24/7, but keep track of who enters the portal and see how many of them actually leave, because entering the portal doesn't mean you're going to leave.
Correct. It just gives other schools an opportunity to legally contact you.
Yes. Yeah.
And so if there is a coaching change, which I think there will be, then the new coach just gets to compete with all the teams that are contacting a player through the portal. So.
Yeah. All right. And then on defensive side, this is a question. Do you see any changes that need to be done to the defense?
You mean down the stretch?
Yeah.
I think you are what you are at this point. You're nine games in.
And they've played besides the Syracuse game.
Well, they can't stop the run.
Yeah.
But,
Alan Tisdale, after struggling mightily against Syracuse, had a good game against Georgia Tech, and then
he had three very bad games in a row, and then he had a great game against Georgia Tech. And then he actually had his worst game this past week from a grading standpoint.
From a PFF grade
standpoint. I feel like Artis actually graded out pretty well.
I think they played Artis 12 snaps,
and he graded out pretty well. Yeah. So it's a smaller sample size with him. But at this point, I think he deserves an opportunity to play a football game and play 50 snaps in a football game to see if he can make us better.
So you might see that. I looked at the snap counts against Boston College, and Dax basically didn't come off the field. Mm-hmm. Maybe there were a few plays where, for coverage reasons, he came off the field.
Well, with no Dean Ferguson, he's not going to come off.
So that's the point I'm making. And if you're thinking of Artis at the mic, no, he's a backer, and he subbed for Tisdale in Boston College.
Yeah, he can play either spot. So if you're going to bring him into a game, you would want to replace the worst of those two starters, and right now that would be Tisdale.
Yeah.
So I would like to see that happen. It hasn't happened yet, and maybe it won't happen at this point, but I would like to see that experiment. Hopefully Mario Kendricks can come back soon. We don't know the extent of his injury, except he didn't play the other night, and they had to play Panay over 23 snaps, and he didn't play particularly well, but he's a true freshman who I think is probably more of a fit at defensive end than defensive tackle.
It's interesting. Anyway. I looked at his Panay's grades, and you're right. He graded out well tackling, mm-hmm. and in the other aspects of the game, not really, which is what you would expect from
a 255-pound defensive tackle. Yeah. He shouldn't be playing defensive tackle right now,
right?
But he had to.
Yeah. Let's do one more. Do you have any basketball questions in there?
There are no basketball questions, but mine is, besides beating Louisville and snapping that streak,
yes,
what is the most important thing to do this season in basketball?
The most important thing to do is to make the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. and keep hanging those banners, man. And this is how football has to get back on track. I mean, they have to win with mostly three-star recruits to improve their recruiting, I think. And that's what basketball is going to have to do. I mean, they need to run this specific system. I mean, the two highest ranked recruits Mike Young has signed in this program were Joe Bamisil and Jalen Cohn. And they just got beat out by a couple of guys nobody else wanted in Hunter Couture and Naheem Aline, two lowly ranked players. Like, Hunter Couture was like number 500 something in the country in basketball. And in football terms, that translates to somebody ranked around 3,000th in the country, which is basically a two-star recruit.
A guy that they barely bothered to enter into the database.
Exactly. Exactly. Storm Murphy, he wasn't even ranked by 247. Not even in his state, not by anything. Just
did he have a profile? Did he ever?
He had a profile, didn't have a picture, no stars. Man. Not even like two stars. They don't give anybody one star anymore. It's either 5, 4, 3, 2, or none. Well, he had none, right? So Tech's going to make the NCAA tournament this year with a zero-star recruit, a couple of guards that if they were football recruits, would have been two-star recruits. Mutz would have been a two-star recruit, and Aluma would have been a two-star recruit.
It's
football terms.
It's three players in your starting lineup who originally committed to Wofford.
Right.
And then Justin Mutz originally committed
to High Point
right. and then right. Delaware. Right. And then so you've got four guys who were not Power Five players
right.
when they started their career.
You're right. And Aline, I guess, would have been the most highly recruited out of all of those guys. That's how basketball has to do it. They have to build up to that point by recruiting good system fits. And then after 5 or 6 years, you've won enough games and made enough NCAA tournament where you can start to recruit a higher caliber of talent. And that's how UVA won the national championship. You know, it wasn't until Tony Bennett's, you know, fifth year or so that he signed that class with
Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome.
Exactly. The DeAndre Hunter. I think they were all in the same class.
I think Hunter may have been a little bit earlier because I think he left the year.
No, but he redshirted, though.
Okay, he did redshirt.
Right,
okay.
Right. And then their other big guy who's in
Diakite.
No, he was before that.
Salt.
No, Jack not Salt. The guy's in the NBA right now. Maybe he plays for the Lakers.
Is it Huff?
Yeah, Jay Huff.
Jay Huff
was a top 75 recruit. That was a four-man class.
I always like me some Jay Huff, man. He's a good player.
Yeah, 7-foot guy who can shoot the ball.
Exactly.
I like Jack Salt, too. I used to always say the game ain't over till Jack Salt dunks.
Right, right, right. That's how Tony Bennett built it at UVA, and that's how you have to build it at Virginia Tech, in my opinion. And to me, that's how you have to build it in football and basketball. And I'm not suggesting Virginia Tech go out and intentionally sign the 75th ranked recruiting class in football or anything like that. But you're not going to just go out there and sign a bunch of four stars on a dime. And if the last 3 or 4 years has taught us anything, is Virginia Tech has a bunch of four star players in the program right now in football that haven't developed. Player development's the most important thing, and it's the most important thing in basketball, too. So to me, make the NCAA tournament, and then make it again next year, and just make yourself a perennial NCAA tournament team, raise your profile as a program, and that will give you access to better talent, no matter what system you run.
More opportunities you get in the NCAA tournament, more opportunities you get to make a run. So
yep.
It's a one win or a single elimination tournament. Anything can happen. So Hokies trying to get in for what would be the fifth straight NCAA tournament, not counting that 2021. Nick, thank you for going through those for us. And thank you to everybody who was in the chat giving questions and comments throughout the day. Chris, what do we have coming up on Tech Sideline over the next few days? Got basketball tomorrow
night.
We have another
basketball kind of preview article
from
Drew Scott, GC Hokie 34 on our boards. And, other than that, it'll be regular football content this week. And I want to make one more comment. Remember, every year back in the Ricky Stokes era, the main question on the basketball board would be, can we qualify for the Big East tournament this year?
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are talking about making five straight NCAA tournaments and winning ACC regular season titles. Like, I don't know if I ever thought it would actually happen, but here we are.
Very nice.
Well, and tomorrow night, women's basketball also starts their season against Davidson. They are ranked to start off the year, and I believe Chris Hirons will be covering that game.
Yeah, he and David have gotten together on a preview, which I guess will be posted today or tomorrow, but you would have to ask our managing editor.
Yep, that's
managing
right.
editor who is at Justin Fuente's press conference right now. And then preview will be posted Wednesday for Duke.
Yep.
And then our
preview podcast Wednesday.
Preview podcast. I'm sure it'll be, we may flip-flop it, do basketball recap in the first half and then Duke preview in the second half. Mm-hmm.
Be sure to tune into YouTube and see me wear what I call my accidental Duke shirt. I have a polo shirt I wear when we preview Duke games. It looks like a Duke shirt.
We're looking forward to it. This could be the Hokies' last chance to get a win this season, and last chance for Hokies fans to tailgate.
And it's a 3:30 game.
3:30 kick.
Thank goodness. Yeah, it's not going to be a noon game. You could actually get a nice tailgating day in. It's the most important thing right now.
I couldn't believe it wasn't a noon game. But yes, 3:30 kick on Saturday for Virginia Tech and Duke. We'll preview that on Wednesday and again go through men's basketball's first game against Maine tomorrow night. That is an 8 p.m. tip in Castle Coliseum. Women get started at 5 p.m. against Davidson. Doubleheader in Blacksburg. That's going to do it for episode 206 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Want to thank everybody for tuning in and thank everybody on set. Will Stewart across the way, founder and general manager of TechSideline.com. He is at Will Stewart TSL on Twitter. Chris Coleman to my left, lead analyst and columnist for Tech Sideline at Chris Coleman TSL on Twitter. To my right, it is Nick Brown in the fourth chair. Did a great job once again. Nick Brown 33 on Twitter.
That is correct.
That is correct. Okay, I finally got it right. Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes always does a great job as our podcast producer. And I'm Jake Lyman, your host, signing off. Enjoy the game tomorrow night, Hokies fans, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday.